I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
Too many cooks in the kitchen. Is that what's going on at NRG? We hear about all these quarterback coaches. Obviously, you got Davis Mills in town. You're trying to develop a new guy. Ben McDaniels, who nobody can get his name right, but he's the brother of Josh McDaniels. He's been a quarterback coach at Michigan. Didn't go too well. Now he's a receiver coach. Pep Hamilton, quarterback coach in the NFL. Andrew Luck, quarterback coach. He's been the quarterback coach for Justin Herbert as recent as last year. The reigning NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year. And you have Tim Kelly and David Culley, who also has experience as a quarterback coach. Are there too many cooks in the kitchen, J-Lo?
I think it's the potential is there on two fronts. The first one I feel is the most important one because it affects the entire team, and that is Tim Kelly. Here we are. We're all acknowledging Tim Kelly as kind of a placeholder, right? Just like David Culley is a placeholder for the next coach for a couple of years as the head coach. Well, Tim Kelly is thanking his lucky stars that he's even here. So he's going to be subservient. He's going to be welcoming any influence or suggestions from guys that are around him, starting with Nick Caserio and certainly even David Culley, that is his boss, you know, by definition. So when you're running an offense without Deshaun Watson, and they will, and your offense didn't have a running game to speak of, and certainly – Deshaun Watson bailed you out time after time after time with just his individual skill. I'm wondering, you just mentioned it, you got four guys, and that's not even counting guys that have been on offensive staffs elsewhere and helped with the offensive play calling or whatever. But Pep Hamilton has called plays and has had influence on game plans. Of course, Ben McDaniels did at Michigan with his brother Jim Harbaugh, who has that NFL pedigree.
Not his brother.
With his coach, the head coach, Jim Harbaugh. David Culley was the passing game coordinator, his last job, and was the offensive coordinator in Buffalo, or a quarterback's coach in Buffalo. And then, of course, Tim Kelly. So those four guys, they're all going to be in the same room trying to develop a plan.
My problem is this. It's not necessarily that they have too many guys who've done it, because I don't think you can have too many cooks in the kitchen when it comes to guys who know the quarterback position. I go back to Green Bay in the 90s. You had John Gruden. You had Mike Holmgren. You had Steve Mariucci. Like, you had a lot of guys that, you know, had expertise at the quarterback position. My problem is three out of the four we just mentioned I don't think are very good at it. Josh Allen struggled with David Culley as a rookie. He took the next step whenever Culley left.
Yeah.
Ben McDaniels at Michigan, Michigan's quarterback play was very suspect, and there's a reason that they moved him to wide receiver coach here. I think it was basically a favor to even give him a job. I think it was Nick Caserio looking out for his college buddy, Josh McDaniels, and just giving a guy a low-level NFL job. Tim Kelly, I don't think he had anything to do with Deshaun Watson. I mean, he was coaching tight ends 3 years ago. I think Bill O'Brien just felt comfortable with Tim Kelly because he'd been with him for a decade, and he let him take over as offensive coordinator, let him coach the quarterbacks, and Deshaun Watson saved his butt. My problem is I think there's only one guy that I actually trust that has a track record, a tangible track record with substance of working with quarterbacks, and that's Pep Hamilton. Yeah. Pep Hamilton was the quarterback coach for Justin Herbert last year. Justin Herbert admits and has said that Pep Hamilton helped him out a ton and had him ready to go. And my problem is that if all of these guys, I think Ben McDaniels is basically just going to be running drills with wide receivers. So I'm not even worried about him. But I don't think that many of these guys are good at it except Pep Hamilton, which is why I think this is the direction they're going to go. And I hope this is the direction they're going to go, where Pep Hamilton's going to be the guy that spends the most time with Davis Mills or whoever the Texans decide to play at quarterback. And he's going to be the guy that has the most control, because I think the other three guys don't really have a proven, tangible track record with success, with substantial success of working with quarterbacks.
But to me, that's almost worse, because the guy who's supposedly, running the offense is Tim Kelly, who I think he's the most vulnerable to be influenced by a bunch of different voices. You know, he's kissing the ground over at NRG, man. He should have been gone with Bill O'Brien after the season, after Bill O'Brien was fired during the season. So, yeah, if David Culley says, well, we did this in Buffalo, we did this in Baltimore, we did this in Kansas City, let's try to implement that. Okay. Even Ben McDaniels, Josh and I have talked about this, and this. Okay. And then Pep, of course, is probably the strongest and most proven voice there. Okay, he'll have an influence. It's not unusual to have a lot of quarterback, talent in the coaching room. You know, I know, heck, Nick Sirianni is now the head coach. He was in Indianapolis, and Frank Reich was the head coach. He was a quarterback's guy. Our friend Gerard was in the quarterback's room. It's not unusual. What I'm saying is Tim Kelly is vulnerable, as a guy who's you talk about David Culley maybe being a yes man as head coach. Tim Culley is vulnerable as the offensive coordinator. That's one front. Then the other front is you're bringing a rookie quarterback that had 11 starts into that room with all these voices in his head. I'm not worried. It just is a kind of a red flag to me.
When I hear them say that Pep Hamilton had a hand in bringing in Davis Mills, it leads me to believe that Pep Hamilton's going to be the guy working with him.
Yeah.
And I don't want to put too much pressure and put Pep Hamilton on some sort of pedestal. Like, we're not talking about Bill Walsh or anything like that. And furthermore, I don't know how good Davis Mills is. So I don't want Davis Mills, if a fourth round pick or a third round pick at quarterback goes out on the field and struggles, I don't think that can 100% be placed on the shoulders of the quarterback coach, because more times than not, quarterbacks drafted in the third round don't go out there and thrive. There's only one quarterback that was drafted in said round that is currently starting in the NFL, and that's Russell Wilson. So I don't want to put too much pressure on Pep Hamilton there, but I will say he needs to be the guy that's working with Davis Mills. And when I hear David Culley and I hear Nick Caserio talk about Pep Hamilton's relationship with Stanford coach David Shaw and that having something to do with it, I naturally assume that he, not Tim Kelly, is going to be the one that's spending the most time with Davis Mills.
Well, Tim Kelly has to. I mean, he allegedly is going to be doing all the game planning. And so then you have Pep. I mean, where is there going to be? Again, it's not like I'm predicting these things, but it's for a team that has so many new players and two new quarterbacks. We forget Tyrod Taylor as well, even though he's a veteran. To have all these voices in their head and all these influences. And what's David Culley going to do? As I mentioned, he was a passing game coordinator. He's been a receivers coach. He's been a quarterback.
They were last in the league in passing last year.
I know, but now he's the head coach and he has final say. It's just one of those things where I'm like, ooh, that's a little bit of a red flag for the offensive coordinator and Tim Kelly, and the new quarterbacks, especially the rookie.
I think this is almost kind of like an internship for, and I use internship loosely. Obviously, it's a little bit more, but I look at this as Pep Hamilton. When you talk about guys progressing, and you talk about the competition that Nick Caserio talks about on this roster, and there's competition. I've said that success when it comes to a rebuild would be, 7-8 of these guys that you brought in, you being comfortable enough to bring them back and put them on your 2-deep heading into the 2022 season when you'll be more competitive. I think Pep Hamilton, they would love to develop Pep Hamilton into a guy that they 100% trust.
I agree.
Calling plays in this offense. And I think when we talk about development, I think we look at Davis Mills and we say, because Pep Hamilton, when it comes to play calling, he hasn't had a ton of success. He's done it, but not really at the NFL level. He hasn't done it a lot. I look at Davis Mills developing into whatever he's going to develop into late in the season. And I think in a perfect world, they would like, when it comes to the coaching staff, Lovie Smith's not going to be here long-term. David Coley's not going to be here long-term. Tim Kelly, I don't even think he should be here right now. I think they look at Pep Hamilton and they say, okay, he worked with Justin Herbert. He worked with Andrew Luck. He has a decent, tangible track record of working with quarterbacks. Maybe we can develop Pep Hamilton into one of those guys who we're comfortable with calling an offense in our system. And at the end of this season, we're comfortable handing him the keys to the offense. And that's one thing. To me, that's the best thing with the most tangible success that mm-hmm. you can have on this coaching staff.
But here's the thing. You saying that, and I agree with what you said, is not news to Tim Kelly. He knows the score. You know, he as I mentioned, he knows he's lucky to be here. He knows Pep Hamilton probably is being groomed to be the next offensive coordinator. So it's just a lot on his plate, a lot of voices in his head, and a lot of voices in Davis Mills and Tyrod Taylor's head. You know, you always hear, especially rookie quarterbacks, just simplify things. You know, just simplify it. Make it at least until he gets his feet under him a little bit, you know, midway through the season or something. That's not simple at all to have that many guys trying to get their hands on the quarterback.
Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig with you here on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Texans getting some on-field work. John McClain was mentioning the destinations for Deshaun Watson and where Watson could end up. We'll get into that in about 5 minutes right here on In the Loop Sports Radio 610. It's also OG Column Tuesday, and John Lopez has a column about fanhood. There's a lot of emotions going on around here. Not necessarily the most cohesive fan base, but it might be the most emotional. We'll get into that a little bit later on right here on Sports Radio 610. But of course, tonight, about 8 hours from now, good God, it's going to be late. The Astros versus the A's, a win puts them in first place. Second quarter of the season for the Astros. When it comes to looking at pivotal moments in the long marathon season of what comes with an MLB layout, you have a few dates that you look at, OG, and they are pretty close.
I think there are three important dates in the course of a baseball season when you know, do we have a chance? Are we in the position we need to be? What do we need to do? And those three dates are traditionally for me Memorial Day, 4th of July weekend, and Labor Day. Those are the three. It's easy to remember. Three big holidays that we all go fishing or to the pool or whatever at. And those three dates tell you where you are. Memorial Day is coming up real quick. And so it's a good time right now for the Astros after this series and then Rangers and then some other tough series coming up to take stock of where they are. They're just a half game back in first place right now. They're in a good spot. So Memorial Day is going to be the first gauge. Then 4th of July weekend is kind of when you start to make your big moves. It's no coincidence that the trade deadline generally comes at the end of July because a lot of teams take stock on 4th of July weekend, pretty much the middle of the season, and then they make the moves they need to make. Will the Astros make those moves? Will they, you know, will they stand pat? Are they going to be in first place and able to hold teams off and get those final pieces? What will pitching and injuries be like? Then you get to Labor Day. Labor Day is the last big mark in time in any baseball season, and Labor Day is when you make that stretch run and do whatever you can. Then you have September call-ups, et cetera.
Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig. We'll get a look at the Astros. Christian Javier on the mound. Seems like this might be the team that he's faced the most, the A's. They've gotten a lot of looks at Christian Javier about a year and a quarter into his MLB career, but we'll see what happens with the Astros. In pretty good shape. Framber Valdez, by the way, getting that rehab start going. Coming up, the Deshaun Watson destinations. John McClain joined the show earlier. He talked about them. We'll give them to you next.
Get in the loop.
There's a strong possibility that if the NFL wants to have stadiums at full capacity, the roof at NRG is going to have to stay open for more air circulation, etc. Early in the season, this could make for a huge home field advantage for the Houston Texans. Jacksonville, Carolina, and maybe even New England, they're going to be on the sunny side of the field. They're going to be in the heat. They're going to be in the humidity. I think that's a real possibility, and I think that's what nobody's talking about.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
Deshaun Watson destinations. John McClain brought him Philadelphia, high on the list. Miami's still high on the list. I think Las Vegas is the team to look out for, especially if Aaron Rodgers ends up with the Broncos. He mentioned the Broncos being desperate. I just think Aaron Rodgers makes more sense for them.
I agree. Totally agree.
If a coach is on the hot seat, like John talked about Vic Fangio being on the hot seat and Denver not being where they're supposed to be. If that's the case, we don't know what kind of suspension Deshaun Watson's going to serve and if it's going to happen, but we assume that there's going to be some sort of suspension.
Yes.
A guy like a Brian Flores in Miami, a Nick Sirianni, who's a first-year coach in Philadelphia, John Gruden, who pretty much has a lifetime contract with the Raiders, they can endure suspensions this year. But if you're Vic Fangio and you're an older guy, this is probably going to be your only chance to be an NFL coach.
On the hot seat, in essence.
And you're in on the hot seat. How the hell are you going to be able to trade for Deshaun Watson and then all of a sudden sit there while he's suspended and you're rolling out there with Drew Lock? I don't think Denver makes sense at all for Deshaun Watson. I actually got them crossed off my list.
No, I agree with you. I think Aaron Rodgers is the Denver pick, much like I used to say about a year ago now about Bill O'Brien's crazy moves. I always said, you know, he's making these moves with a clear conscience because if they work, he's a hero. If they don't, he'll be fired. And it's somebody else's problem. Well, it is now in Houston somebody else's problem, and he got fired. I think Vic Fangio can do the same thing and just stomp his feet and slam his fist in the table and say, we got to get Aaron Rodgers. I think Aaron Rodgers is the play in Denver, no doubt.
I think Aaron Rodgers, if he gets traded, he ends up in Denver. Now Green Bay is saying they want to repair this relationship. Many people, including John McClain, feel like the relationship could be repaired. And that would change everything. But I think if Denver makes the trade in that situation, I think it's an after-the-season trade. I think the only question when it comes to Deshaun Watson, is he getting traded before the season or after? This, like, before the trade deadline, I just don't see it. I think this Deshaun Watson cloud could actually linger through 2021. And then 2022, heading into the draft, once the dust is settled, that's when we're talking about where Deshaun Watson ends up.
I don't, and I think David Culley gave us a tell.
But it ain't his call, right?
No, but he's in the room with Nick Caserio and Cal McNair or Kyle, however you want to say it, and he knows what the narrative is. He knows what the story is. When he was asked directly about Deshaun Watson, he said, "I'm not talking about that." And what have I been telling you all along? They don't want to go through this all year long. Deshaun Watson will be traded before the season.
Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig with you here on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
David, we haven't spoken to you since the first of 22 lawsuits was filed against Deshaun Watson. Do you expect him to be at mini camp or OTAs?
We have nothing to say about that situation at this time. Kyle and ownership a few weeks back indicated about how our organization feels about the situation. I think when Nick was on not long ago, we mentioned that he also mentioned that the legal process is in effect right now, and we're gonna respect that and gonna go from there.
That's a tell.
But do you expect to see him this offseason at all? Like, regardless of the legal issues?
I have nothing to say about that at this time.
That's another tell. Right there. I've been saying that they know what's coming. Those questions are going to come all year long. You go into week 4, week 6, week 8, and there's still no Deshaun Watson. Wait, what's the latest with Deshaun Watson? Do you expect him to join you? Has he already left town? What's the late? They don't want that heat. He's getting traded before the year. And that would tie in even more to not Denver, I would think.
Less than 2 weeks is when it financially becomes
much more
realistic.
Much more viable, yeah.
Now, obviously, the settlement is what we will look out for, which, according to Sarah Barship, who you just heard, there are text messages, and there's context clues, there's common sense, that's the direction that they're trying to head. So those are the two things that need to happen. Then really after that, teams would probably be more willing to trade for Deshaun Watson. The NFL will make their decision, but then teams will be more willing to trade. I do wonder this, though, because I think as recent as maybe even a few years ago, we assumed that Roger Goodell had a certain way of handling things when it came to you know, off field stuff. And there was, you know, he's the judge, jury, all that type of stuff. And we heard that there's no method to the madness, comparing Big Ben Roethlisberger's situation, comparing Zeke Elliott's. I wonder if he's kind of softened his tone. I wonder if this suspension's really going to be as bad as we initially thought it was. And if the NFL is going to feel like they need to take some sort of stance.
Yeah.
Because I don't think the NFL wants to get in the business of adjusting suspensions, punishments based on the legal system. I actually think Roger Goodell has kind of toned it down a little bit, but it will be interesting to see how he handles this Watson situation. And you've heard that he's already talked to some of these accusers. I think the fact that Tony Busby is complaining about the way that those meetings went, to me tells me that maybe, and I think Attorney Sam said this as well, maybe the NFL didn't see as much substance to what Tony Busby's claims were as he had hoped. Again, this is just me assuming, because I assume that if the NFL had met with Tony Busby's clients and they had decided, whoa, this is bad, we got to get him out of the league or so on, I don't think Tony Busby would be complaining. That's just simple.
Well, I don't think the NFL is tipping its hand on what they believe. No matter. Now, he can maybe.
Then what's Tony Busby's
issue? He can maybe interpret how the interview went and the direction of the questions, and he didn't like that. But I think it's possible that Roger Goodell might have softened his stance in some cases, but not this one. And the reason is this is about misconduct with women. You know, that's a big, big thing. Obviously, you know, as it should be. But what I'm saying is the NFL is very, very much all about that. This isn't, you know, shooting yourself in the leg in a nightclub. This isn't a DWI. This isn't getting in a bar fight. This is alleged misconduct with women, 22 of them. And I think Roger Goodell, the last thing he's going to do is go light on any potential suspension because of the topic, because of the subject matter.
So what's light?
I still go back to the most recent suspensions, man. I think it's going to be 10 reduced to 7 or 8. Hopefully 7, and he's in Miami, and the Texans can play him in his first game.
I mean, so you're going to give 10 games if there's no criminal charges or anything like that? I mean,
don't have to have criminal charges.
I know. I get that, but I just think when you start comparing, the Roethlisberger thing was a decade ago. Ben Roethlisberger had – it was a much more – transparent situation where
what was Antonio Brown's
was a little bit more. Antonio Brown's was
that 2017?
Antonio Brown was he was acting like a loon. The dude was posting videos
and he's a different
like
character. Character.
Yeah, and I mean he was front and center. I mean, it looked like the guy was about to do something nuts. Like he looked like a total nut job. Deshaun Watson has kind of just laid back. And he's let the legal process play out. The Roethlisberger thing was just a different time. And I think Roger Goodell, he wasn't completely new, but he was a relatively new commissioner.
Yeah, he wanted to establish himself.
So I think I think he was being a little bit more transparent. Now the Zeke Elliott thing's a little bit different. I think the results of the investigation were a lot different, or they appeared to be a lot different, and they felt like there was a little more smoke there. When it came to the NFL's investigation. But I just think at this point in his career with where Roger Goodell is with no criminal charges, I don't know what the – and again, if there are criminal charges, that changes everything. I'm thinking like 4 to 6 is what I'm looking at. I'm on like the Tiki Barber type of thing where I think it's going to be a 4 to 6 game suspension, assuming that there's a settlement and assuming that there's nothing new that emerges criminal-wise.
It very possible. Again, assuming that there's no criminal charges, I think that's very possible. I just think subject matter is going to make him pay attention a lot closer to what his suspension is going to be.
Landry Locker, John Lopez, and of course, who knows what kind of precedent this could set. That's just the many of the layers that do come with stuff like this. Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig with you. Coming up, it is OG Column Tuesday. A lot of fan emotions when it comes to Texans supporters. We'll hear those emotions, and John Lopez will talk about the right or wrong way to fan. Next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
SportsRadio610.com. John Lopez has a column. It's actually motivated, jumped off from the 1 p.m. hour yesterday. Shout out to the Loopholes. If you listen, you are one. A lot of passion going on around here when it comes to Texans fans, fanhood, all that type of stuff. We'll hear from different fan representations.
I'm disgusted with this old sour ass.
And we'll have the breakdown from the OG John Lopez. But before we do, 713-572-4610. Let's go to Jefferson. Jefferson, you're on In the Loop. Go ahead.
What's up, John and Larry? How you doing today?
Terrific.
Well, I just want to call because I couldn't call in yesterday to defend Larry or people like Larry because it makes me mad that when you see BS being done and you call it out, then you're ridiculed for not being a supporter of the Houston Texans. And a couple of years ago, when Bill thing of destroying this team, someone's really said, hey, man, this is going to be bad for us. When you traded away Clowney for no reason, when you had the little F-rate rating at Denver, when Denver was beating us 55-7, he went on a tangent of because he couldn't control his emotions. And when we see things like this, and then when you say it, fans who just happen to have a team here jumps on our back and said we're not loyal fans. But you don't know football if you don't see what he's doing to the team.
I appreciate you, Jefferson. First of all, I think that's a lot of straw man arguments. People were criticizing Bill O'Brien
I think it's mixed.
I think it just depends on the point of view. But I appreciate the call, Jefferson. Your column today I thought was very entertaining. We're not guys that tell people how to fan. I actually appreciate the different type of fan, the casual fan, the passionate fan, the diehard fan, the ride or die fan, so on and so forth. I have appreciation for it, and I think you did a good job of putting fingers to keys and expressing it, Jay.
All right, so there's five types of fans. Is one of these five types you, or do you know someone who is one of these type fans? The first category is the Halloween fan. You know what the Halloween fan is?
No idea.
That's the fan that dresses up big time, accessorizes big time, maybe paints their faces, maybe has a boa, maybe has every piece of clothing.
Here we go, baby!
Logoed, you know, from head to toe. But the Halloween fan is all about pandering and posing and buying seats where the camera angles are just right and they might get on TV or the Jumbotron. And they're real big on taking selfies with anyone and anything associated with the team. That's the Halloween fan.
The Halloween fan. Okay. So
are you familiar with any?
The Halloween fan. I do not know. I don't want to deb into that.
Then the next category is the drinker slash talker. The drinker talker. That fan, maybe this is you.
This is number two.
This is number two. This is the one that tailgates hard outside.
Yeah.
Hangs out at the bar inside the stadium or maybe the back of the club level or the back of the suite. And they talk mad stuff about the team. But after about 5 minutes talking with them, you realize that they really don't know half the stuff they're talking about. They're the drinker talker. They like to call out players by their first name. You know that guy, right? Or that girl? As if they're friends. Oh, well, Cody, you know, he's this, and this. They also tell you how long they've been season ticket holders. As if that makes them more knowledgeable, more of an expert. Well, I've been a season ticket holder since 2009. Well, then I better listen. And they always have unreasonable predictions about winning the championship.
I like both of these people, by the way.
Oh,
I like both of these people.
No one is passing judgment here. I'm saying, do you know this person or are you this person? Next, number three. We know this guy. The armchair GM slash coach. They played high school football and they often tell you about it. They usually embellish every detail of their high school career, and they always mention how if it wasn't for that knee injury, they probably would have gotten a scholarship to play college football.
back in 82, I used to be able to throw a pigskin a quarter mile.
Yep. Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. How much you want to make a bet I can throw a football over them mountains? Yeah. If a coach would have put me in fourth quarter, we'd have been state champions, no doubt. No doubt in my mind. You better believe things would have been different. I'd have gone pro in a heartbeat. I'd be making millions of dollars and living in a big old mansion somewhere, you know, soaking it up in a hot tub with my soulmate.
Now this, you know, the wannabe general manager coach, they know enough football to kind of fool themselves into believing they know more than the general manager.
The cutback guy is always the worst. The guy you're sitting by and the running back doesn't run. He could have went the other way and he would have been in the end zone.
Of course, you're 10 stories above him. You can see where the hole is. They also know exactly why every play failed and why every play succeeded. And here's the tell. They drop a lot of key words that they know nothing about. They'll say things like leverage and good hips.
They're playing quarters.
It's all about the scheme. Number four, the blind faith fan. Okay? The blind faith fan tells you that the backup third-year cornerback that her team just acquired, and hasn't started a single game in their career is a stud. They'll tell you because they know. Why? Because they know. They also will tell you that fifth-round pick that stands 6 foot nothing and started 6 games in college, how he's a hidden gem.
I love blind faith guy.
He's a diamond in
the
rough.
I love blind faith guy.
Isaiah Coulter.
He's a diamond in the rough. The blind faith fan also is the one that cringes and squirms at any criticism thrown toward the team.
I love the blind faith guy.
They're haters. They're not real fans, et cetera. He or she is also really, really good at the I told you so's when things are going well and not being heard from ever when they're like 1-8. Number five, the fifth category of fan, is the realist. This is someone that has PTSD from all the near misses, all the heartbreaks, everything. Players and coaches from other teams are always better than the ones on your team. Players and coaches from their team always have very obvious holes in the game. Now, they also often know enough football to back up their complaints. And when things are great, they will go over the top. They're fans. They're big-time fans, but they're realists. They'll go over the top. They'll be loud and proud. But in their hearts, they're always kind of waiting for the other shoe to fall.
Killer game in Houston today. Do you understand that it is actually statistically harder for a team to be this consistently bad than it is for them to occasionally accidentally be good?
The probability is staggering. Did you happen to see that Packers-Chargers game today? It's like they're playing a different sport than you are.
And here's what you have to understand. We don't even expect you to be good. We just want you to be watchable. Do you have any idea how low our expectations are? We don't expect you to win the Super Bowl. We just want you to look better than a Division III high school team.
And listen, I know that there are way more important things in life than football, but you are supposed to be our pleasant distraction from those things.
But all we do is pay you money to put us in a bad mood every week.
You are a factory of sadness!
I'll see you Sunday.
See you Sunday. That's the realist. They're there. They're fans. But they're frustrated.
SportsRadio610.com has a list. So just to reset the list. Number one.
Numero uno.
Number one is the... Where did I have it? I had it right here. I want to make sure I get them in right in order. Oh, number one is the Halloween fan. Number two.
Numero dos.
The drinker talker.
Numero tres.
The armchair GM coach.
Numero cuatro.
The blind faith fan.
Number five.
The realist.
Where does Jags Lady fit in? I want to hear from Jags Lady. I want you to tell me where she falls in.
Oh, you know where she falls in.
They say they have the best draft in the entire NFL. Are you surprised to hear that?
Certainly not. The first year we took it to the limit. And I was in Miami with my new beach house. Well, it was a couple minutes from the beach.
It's been 20 years since then. We haven't been too strong in the last few years.
Oh, we've been strong. We're just playing by the rules. You can't have a newcomer come in and steal a show.
God, she's awesome. That's the blind faith, man. That's the blind faith fan right there.
We had some good calls yesterday. I think it kind of shows the intensity heading into 2021. Let's start with Larry and Stafford. Larry and Stafford, I think, would be an example of number five. Maybe a little bit of a realist, maybe an extreme realist, but a ride or die nonetheless. I don't think anyone can question. You might have a different philosophy, but nobody can question. Really, nobody can question the fanhood of any of the next three. You can't question the ride and die with Larry.
Davis Mills is not a prototype. He's a prototype for what we've seen out of Blaine Gabbert and Mitchell Trubisky. Davis Mills and all this stuff, this word salad that David Culley and these clowns over there on Kirby are trying to sell us is stupid. We've already seen what a prototype 2021, 21st century quarterback looked like, and he still resides here in H-Town. And we just have not figured out. I'll get to Deshaun in a minute. Let me touch on Culley. This is the thing that irritates me. He comes out here and everybody wants to just feel sorry for David Culley, and he's such a good guy. And then he gets on the radio and Landry asks him the brilliant question, have you had Tex-Mex? And I start with the nachos and I go from there. And when I get through to with the nachos, I get there's no Tex-Mex. Man, I don't give a damn what you eating in the H, to be honest with you. What I care about is what your philosophy is when it comes to football. David Culley is maybe, I'll give y'all the benefit of the doubt. And let's just say he's a great person at 65 or whatever years old. Most 65-year-olds aren't really going and skiing Mount Kilimanjaro. They ain't trying to climb Mount Everest. They aren't really going out there doing much because they've already lived a life. David Culley is just somebody over there that they put up and they put their hand in his back and say, now you can speak and say something about these people. I got a whistle, and I hit him over the head with the whistle, and, man, I don't care about that. I want somebody to explain to me that if Nick Caserio is such an articulate, brilliant general manager, does he not have the communication skills, or do they have nobody in their communication department over there that could physically go to Deshaun Watson's house and have an intelligent conversation with him about why he should remain the quarterback of the Houston Texans? Because when you talk about baking a cake, Lopez, they have all the ingredients for the cake. They just don't have no sugar or no soul in it. Because, see, that's what's required when you bake a cake. You got to have some sweetness and you got to have some soul when you cook it, i.e. when you make that OG sauce. You see what I'm saying? You put a little love in it, don't you? And if it ain't in there, it ain't going to taste the same. Look, man, I'm going to break this down to y'all in the simplest form. I've given the Houston Texans 20 years of my life, right? And so all of a sudden, I walk into my house, and somebody got the old lady bent over, right? And it ain't me. I ain't going to feel the same way about the old lady no more, man. I don't feel the same way about them Texans unless they get off their ass and send Cal over there with Janice and they tell Deshaun Watson, we want you to be our quarterback and we want to move forward with you because if not, we cannot go forward and it's going to take us longer. Landry, I know you got that analogy, man. Keep drinking that ghost. I like that raspberry, too, in our hollow.
He's about that ghost, too.
I think we have a realist.
Shout out to the ghost. That's representation number one. We have the optimist next, James. Little beef, little Texan on Texan crime between James and Larry. But you know what? There's no wrong way to fan. Here was James leading into the Texans 2021 season as the veterans took the field for the first time.
I'm a real Texan fan, man. I'm not one of these Texan fans going to call in bashing. I ain't never heard Larry Stafford call in to say anything positive about the Texans, but he's supposed to be such of a good fan. Now, Davis Mills was one of the best quarterbacks in the draft. Mel Kiper said it. Lewis Riddick said it. I'm tired of every time the Texans make a move, bro. Whatever move they make, always be minimized. Bro, Nick Caserio done did an excellent job, man, since he been here. He don't got major players. Shaq Lawson is no scrub. Philip Lindsay is no scrub. Mark Ingram is no scrub. Everybody they got is worthy. They got NFL experienced players, especially on defense. They got one of the best receivers in the draft in Nico Collins. They got one of the best tight ends in the draft. He was the number two or number three tight end in the whole draft. We got him in the fifth round. I'm tired of all these Houston fans supposed to be, oh, we H-Town, we H-Town. Stop being whining babies and stay in a positive mind frame, man. Nick Caserio is doing a great job. I guarantee you, if Nick Caserio would have went to the Carolina Panthers, like they say he was going before the Texans got him, and he would have did the exact same moves he did, everybody have been patting him on the back. But since it's with the Texans, it's being minimized. I don't like that, man. I got Deshaun Watson jersey in my closet. I'm a Houston guy for real, born and raised. I'm not gonna support a guy that don't want to play for my team. He don't want to play for the Texans. Let's move on. Okay. Davis Mills might not be better than Deshaun Watson, but that don't mean we can't win games with Davis Mills. We was winning before Deshaun Watson got here. I know everybody don't got erased over the last few years, but we was winning before Deshaun Watson got here.
Okay.
We have a blind faith.
James, faith versus Larry. Then you have, I'm not sure where this guy falls, but my guy Jim. I think he's a real person.
He might be creating his own category.
I might have been catfished by old Jim, but it was very entertaining. Here is Jim.
Yes, hi. What I hear out of these announcers criticizing the quarterback selection is jealousy. And if you bozos would look at a YouTube video of this quarterback,
Jim,
from Stanford,
you can't be a real caller. You have to be trolling me right now, right? You're not.
No,
I'm right?
No.
You're on your lunch.
No, I'm
you're
real.
On your lunch
you
break, joking, right?
You're telling me to go look at
a YouTube video.
Yeah.
That's
see
what you're
that
saying,
he can throw
Jim.
To,
Jim, you
got
to be recording this.
Show,
this has got to be. This has got to be a fake call.
He throws to the back shoulder of receivers. Most NFL QBs can't do it.
Most NFL QBs can't throw back shoulder fades?
That's right. Jim, come on, man.
Just tell me your buddies are in the corner at least laughing at this.
The other thing is he is intellectually smart.
Okay. What quarterbacks aren't?
Well, most of them take 2 or 3 years to learn what an X and O is because they're not very smart coming out of college, most of these
QB jobs.
Okay,
so let me get this right, Jim. So most quarterbacks in the NFL can't throw a back shoulder fade, and most of them take 2 years to figure out what an X and O is. There's no way you're real.
That's true. This guy will step in and start right away because he has a brain and he can use it right.
Let's stop there. Armchair GM coach. That's what he is. He probably says things like leverage, and they're playing quarters a lot.
713-572-4610. Larry and Stafford, you're on In the Loop. Go ahead.
Hey, gentlemen. Glad to get in again today to press dress what went on yesterday after my call. I'll get to James last, but Jim talking about most quarterbacks can't throw a back shoulder and most quarterbacks aren't intelligent or intellectually smart or whatever he said, man. And then John McCain come on this morning talking about he agree with Jim. And I'm sitting here thinking, if you read into what he's trying to say, if you're somebody that's like me, you know exactly what he's talking about when he's talking about that old Davis Mill dude being a little bit smart. And I can guarantee you Deshaun Watson will run circles around Davis Mills on that whiteboard when they get him up there and ask him to run defenses and things like that. So I'm not buying what Jim was talking about, man. He's from the Stone Ages and believed that brothers can't play quarterback, and he just didn't want to say it out loud. But anyway, let's talk about James. Look, James he's entitled to feel the way that he feels. And I'm with you guys. I would never tell anybody how to fan. But it seems to me that a lot of people like to call in and tell me what I'm not. And all these people that continuously try to tell me that I'm not a Texan fan and that I bash the Texans and Texans and all this other stuff, they probably haven't been listening since 2002 when all this stuff got ramped up. Because I'm one of the staunchest defenders of the Houston Texans when it comes to playing football and wanting my team to win. And if some of y'all want to settle for just being able to go to the games and tailgate and to walk into the stadium with your friends and go to the Diamond Club and drink and all, that's you. That's okay. That's not me. I'm about trying to get a championship because if you can't do the math, the Houston Oilers played in two AFC championships in 78 and 79. The Houston Texans have never played in an AFC championship game. That is a long stretch of football for Houston Texans fans to have never been in a championship game for football. And I'm about trying to get over the top on this mountain. And if anybody continuously trying to doubt me as a Texan fan or whatever, just bring whatever smoke you got and let me run circles around your ass on my Texans history. Because I guarantee you I haven't missed a game over there on Kirby. And I can guarantee you also that if you want to talk Texans football, all the football, Houston Astros or Houston Rockets, to someone who was born and raised in the H, I'm your dude. Because, James, let me tell you something. I've been here, dog, and I could probably get down with you. But, man, don't come in here talking about what I don't do when I do it every single day and your ass be listening and I'll holler.
There you go. All right. I feel like it's a WWF match, old school. Landry Locker, John Lopez.
I can vouch for Larry's fandom, man.
I can vouch for James's fandom. I can vouch for any fandom because all fandom is a great thing no matter how it is presented. Again, not the most cohesive fan base right now, the Houston Texans. You can blame Cal McNair, Jack Easterby, Bill O'Brien for that. But the passion is at an all-time high. Speaking of the Texans, speaking of the AFC South, the five biggest questions of the offseason in the division all center around the most important position, and three of those questions involve your Houston Texans. Round the league next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road, the steeper the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.